Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Ridge. My name's Pip Adam and yes, thanks for listening. We have something short and sharp and odd today. It's odd for me because I usually talk to other people, but today what I've done is recorded something I've written and I hope that's okay. Seems a bit self-indulgent, but yeah, there you go. I wrote this in response to the Cindy Sherman exhibition, which is currently on at the City Gallery Wellington. It's a major exhibition of Cindy Sherman's photography and it goes until the 19th of March 2017. So for over about, I think it's getting near to 40 years, Cindy Sherman, who's a New York based artist, has been using herself as her own model. So what she does is stages these photographs where she transforms her appearance using makeup and costume and prosthetics and more recently digital effects. So this piece was written as part of a series of talks for the Tuatara Open Late series. The Open Lates are these incredible events where, exactly as it says, the gallery is open past dark and there's often great music and dancing and people talk. And one of the events they've been having over these is one called My Favourite Cindy. So the idea behind this is that people from very different sort of places talk about their favourite Cindy, the photograph that speaks to them or the space in the gallery that speaks to them the most. So while most of the gallery is taken up with Sherman's large bright photographs, the piece that kept talking to me and my favourite Cindy is actually in the Dean and Hirschfeld galleries, which are these small slim rooms. So it's actually in sort of an adjunct exhibition which is called Other People's Photographs. So this exhibition draws on Sherman's collection of found photographs, scrapbooks and albums, and I just thought I'd read a little bit from the program so that you can get an idea of the piece that I was responding to. So the exhibition also includes albums and scrapbooks that once belonged to families, lovers and fans. Bobby and Cindy was Sherman's first found scrapbook. It previously belonged to star-crossed lovers whose identities are known only through the names scrawled across its pages. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy this. I think that, it's just a little response to Bobby and Cindy. So, yes, I hope you enjoy it. Thanks heaps. These are pages from the scrapbooks of the real Cindy O'Neill. They memorialise Cindy and Bobby in a way that makes that abstract idea concrete and stops that moment of a life in its tracks. The objects of love are stuck by Cindy O'Neill into the pages, then labelled. The red heart-shaped chocolate box, the letters, and beside these, surely the most haunting objects, the chewing gum that was once inside Bob's mouth and the last cigarette he smoked at gate 9 at 9:40 at the airport before he left for San Francisco. Flight 845 left at 10, writes Cindy O'Neill. United Airlines, she writes. He kissed me goodbye at 10 to 10. I love you. This note is dated March 14, 1965. Friday, January 17, 1964, was Cindy and Bob's 7-month anniversary, according to Cindy O'Neill. It's all, of course, according to Cindy O'Neill. The evidence of love was collected by Cindy O'Neill, labelled by Cindy O'Neill, and intended, I'm pretty sure, only for Cindy O'Neill. When we looked at the scrapbooks together on Tuesday in preparation for tonight, Tracy said something that should have occurred to me earlier. These scrapbooks have come a long way from home to appear here in a gallery, under glass, next to the work of the other Cindy, the Cindy with a Y, the Cindy who found them and kept them and now displays them in an active collection. My child and I stood side by side on Tuesday before we met Tracy and looked at Cindy O'Neill's scrapbook pages. Tookie said, it's a little love me senpai, isn't it? Toki was referring to a game they love called Yandere Simulator. It's a dark, stealth, action game, and I am possibly a terrible parent for letting Toki play it. It centres on a lovesick schoolgirl, Ayano Aishi, who has taken it upon herself to eliminate anyone she believes is monopolising her crush's attention. Ayano Aishi is better known as Yandere-chan. Yandere is a term used in anime and manga to describe a person who is initially loving and caring to someone they like a lot, until their romantic love, admiration and devotion become feisty and mentally destructive in nature through either overprotectiveness, violence, brutality or all three. Yandere characters are mentally unstable, incredibly deranged, and use extreme violence or brutality as an outlet for their emotions. Yandere are usually, but not always, female characters. Female love gets a hard time in culture, and although I was excited that Toki had made a connection between something in an art gallery and the culture they swim in, I felt this odd guilt that by me showing Toki these pages, they were able to level this judgment at the real Cindy O'Neill. I wish now I'd said something like, "It's only part of who Cindy O'Neill is," or "Someone put these pages together to make a story. Bob might only be going to San Francisco for a wee while. Bob and Cindy might be married now." Or at least, I wish I'd said, "We don't know what it was like in 1965. But I didn't. I giggled. I liked the idea that I'd shown Toki something cool enough to be in an anime. And this judgment Toki had made, I'd made it myself when I first saw the scrapbooks. I decided that Bob was old, much older than Cindy, and possibly that maybe Bob wasn't that into her, that maybe Bob had a Cindy O'Neill in every port, that it was young love, foolish love, over-exaggerated and full of angst. It was a judgment based on my own experience of what I remembered of my obsessive love of two men in particular in my early 20s. I didn't keep scrapbooks or diaries, but I wrote short stories and poems and sent the men concerned gifts and letters. I kissed one of them once, and I'm sure he regrets that drunken moment even now. Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't even think about it. Maybe he doesn't even remember it. I never went out with a person that was that into me until I was in my early 30s. Before that, I thought I loved deeply, that I felt more than other people, that no one could love me as much as I loved them. If I could have, I would have picked up every cigarette butt of every lover and kept it in a jar under my bed. But instead, I cried and talked endlessly about how hard it was to feel this deeply. I'm telling you this now because I feel bad about laughing with Toki at Cindy O'Neill. I feel bad about bringing you here and showing you Cindy O'Neill's scrapbooks. But this and the room next door are truly my favourite rooms. I find this exhibition of Cindy Sherman's photographs really disturbing. And for some reason, I feel differently disturbed in these rooms. I'm not saying feeling disturbed is a bad thing. It's an incredible thing. That art can make me meet myself and the society I live in a way that disquiets me to this extent is something truly singular. A lot of people I've talked to and read have raised political reasons this exhibition might be disturbing. I've raised these concerns myself and believe they're extremely relevant and need to be part of the discussion surrounding this exhibition and Sherman's work. But lately, I've been interested in what it is about me that makes this exhibition disturbing to me, and what it means to me to have among all this disturbance Cindy O'Neill's scrapbook pages. Her scrapbook pages that are not dressed up for the viewer, but instead just sit here, quietly under glass. What does it mean to have a real person's words in amongst all the performed characters? I guess what I'm about to do next is a kind of laying bare, to stand in some kind of solidarity with Cindy O'Neill. Or maybe it's just an act of self-indulgence. But here is something about me that I think might explain, to me, why I find the images of Cindy Sherman so disturbing. I have no idea what I look like. Although this is still a terrifying way to live, I have fought long and hard to get to a point where I make the moment-by-moment decision that I have no idea what I really look like, that something is broken in my self-recognition equipment. When I'm not making this decision, I know exactly what I look like, or at least what parts of me look like. In my life, I've spent hours in obsessive attempts to change or conceal parts of my body which I know are horrifyingly and grotesquely wrong. I'm not perfect. Sometimes when I look down, I catch sight of my nose and remember it's inhumanly large. I can spend days thinking about the parts of my body which are not right. When I look around a room, I am sure the parts of my body don't look like anyone else's. While everyone else looks right to me, when I look down, I am sure my hands are too small for my huge arms, and my feet can barely balance the weight and girth of my hips and stomach. I've worn shoes that are a size too big most of my life. I like clothes with pockets, and I began wearing glasses long before I needed them. Sometimes I think that inside me is a body that is right. I am unsure where I got this idea of right, but this imaginary body is under the comically massive nose that gets in my road when I read and the massive stomach that I carry round. I read a quote by Cindy Sherman the other day where she said, "I like experimenting with being as ugly as I can possibly be, but I guess that's because I don't think of it as me." And it dawned on me that this was what disturbs me about her work. I guess I do think of it as me. Many of the images in this exhibition mirror the way I see myself. Somehow, a right-looking woman made ugly by the wrong type of nose or the wrong-shaped stomach. And it freaks me out. I feel for some reason, now that these mirrors of how I see myself are on the walls, very large and designed to be grotesque in a lot of cases, people will recognize these features in me. Like Sherman's images can somehow unlock everyone's ability to see me, like really see me. A few years ago, I had an epiphany that my body couldn't be that special, and if it was, surely I would have been approached by science so they could explore my alien form. And it was then that I realized that I would never know what I really look like, that that would have to be the job of other people, not me. Other people can see me, but I can never truly see myself, which is frightening and anxious-making, but somehow works. And I guess this is why I feel so close to Cindy O'Neill, sitting at home, sellotaping in those cigarette butts that Bob had just finished. Then, one day, throwing away the scrapbooks, or maybe her children threw them away. And then the scrapbooks find their way here in a way that she probably won't ever see. Cindy O'Neill will never see her scrapbook pages here under glass, exhibited in a gallery. And it makes me think about the responsibility of seeing, and how, if I can't see myself, then I hope that others will be compassionate in that act. And it makes me stop thinking about myself and start thinking about Cindy O'Neill and wishing her well.